This is a digital recording of the Senate meeting of December 1st, 2011.
Things to report. There's an invitation for people to participate as poster presenters in the retreat going out hopefully any minute. And I encourage you to read that over and participate in that way if you can. And even if not in that way, definitely come to the retreat, which is 9 to 1 on Thursday, January 12th, as the Thursday before classes start in the spring semester. And it will be over in the Library Teaching Center, which is a very nice space back there. The other piece I have to report is the committee charged with writing a letter to an impartial third party to request an evaluation of the alleged improprieties around the Student Center fee referendum has written letters to three potential bodies that we identified. We have not gotten responses from any of them. I've spent some time on the phone today trying to get responses. Haven't, as of yet, gotten definitive responses from any of those three, but we're working on that. The one option the only positive response we've had so far is from a retired ombudsperson who has offered to take on that work pro bono, provided we cover expenses. So that's the current status of that work. And I hope to have something, hope the committee can come back with something more definitive in 2 weeks. Report and recommendation. And I think that's all I have to report. Are there questions?
Sure. Is there a theme for the retreat?
Yes, the theme for the retreat, what did I call it? The theme is collaboration, and it's something like collaborating to create tomorrow, something like that. I don't remember. Right, that's the dominant theme that's arisen out of all those conversations. And so we'll explore what that might be in that context of our work. Yeah. Any other questions? So let's move on to the agenda. Well, let me see. Let me first, Senator Brown would like to make an introduction.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, on behalf of Student Affairs and Enrollment Management, we are pleased to announce that Anya Bergman has joined our team as of today as our new Career Services Specialist. Anya has a master's degree in education with a specialization in counseling and 10 years of work experience in student affairs and academic affairs at California Polytechnic State San Francisco. She brings a wealth of experience in academic advising, career planning, first year experience programming, and student support services. For the past 5 years, she has served as the Chief Health Professions Advisor for the College of Science and Mathematics at Cal Poly, where she provided integrated advising and career planning services. And prior to that, she served as an academic advisor in the TRIO Student Support Services Program for first-generation low-income students and as an EOP advisor and counselor. And we are very, very, very happy to have her. And we hope that you will at some point stop by in Salazar 1070 and come in and say hello to her and introduce yourself. We are more than pleased that she's here. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. So on to the agenda. Let's see. CFA Representative Merrifield has requested a time certain, so I'm going to put that at 4:15. Are there other reports that would like a time certain? So Senator Sengas or back to Standards and Affairs, let's say 4:30. Okay. Anybody else? Okay, any other changes to the agenda?
Yes, I'd like to move to add the resolution that you have a copy of in front of you from the floor to the agenda.
Is there any objection to adding that resolution to the agenda? Senator Love.
Is there any particular reason it's not going through the usual channels?
Essentially from the floor, it's a group of us who got together and decided that if we'd like to move this resolution, and it seems a bit timely, was a response to somebody that actually away from our campus. So it didn't come from a committee, it came from faculty.
But so the argument for including it on today's agenda is the time release. Is there any objection to including that in the agenda? Okay, other changes to the agenda. Senator Estrada.
Yes, I'd like to substitute a revised resolution from APC for item number 2 on business calendar. So this would not be a second reading, it would be a substitution resolution.
Okay. So if you'll recall, at the first reading, we had significant comments on this resolution of endorsement and sent it back to APC, and they have, instead of continuing with the endorsement of the San Bernardino resolution, have written, proposed Sonoma State statement on the same issue, and so the committee is moving to substitute that motion on the agenda.
Commission, that didn't come forward as a first reading, since this is a new resolution for our first time we see it. When we see it, it'll be a
right, right. Yet. That's right. Then the analyst Holmstrom is xeroxing it as we speak. I don't know. Do you have a?
Not having seen it, I can't comment. I'm not seeing it. Kind of having reference for getting a chance to really look at it that closely.
Right.
Rush it through more quickly.
Yeah. I'm not sure what our practice is. Unless it is substantially the same as the San Bernardino resolution, just with some slight modifications and corrections, I think the standard would be to consider it a first reading. So we'll consider it a first reading, and if it's substantially the same as San Bernardino and we've already seen it, then somebody can move to waive the first reading and we can meet the second. So that's a change to item number 2 on the agenda. Any other changes to the agenda? Senator Luckman.
I just like to point out that we do have a rule that anything that we consider here is we're supposed to have 48 hours to notice about. I didn't get this agenda filled yesterday, and now it's turning out 2 major items aren't even on it. So I'm not going to object at this moment, but I really think that we need to go back to our system of having these things in our hands.
Okay, I will look into that. My impression was that motions from the floor were allowable at the Senate, and the motion to substitute is a standard Roberts Rules motion, and that is the reason, in addition, that we have 2 readings. So I'll look back and see if there's some practice or standards that I need to enforce more carefully. So any more changes to the agenda? All right, any objection to approving this agenda? All right, agenda is approved. Minutes, I believe we have no new minutes to approve yet. The minutes of November 10th are not quite ready. So on to correspondence. As I reported, I've not received any correspondence that I hope for, and we have no consent items today. So we'll move on to some reports. President Carmignani is not here. Provost Rogerson, would you like to make a report?
We now have a vacancy in the Office of Institutional Research. The previous director, Marilyn Sargent, has moved on. We'll be filling that position as soon as we can. And secondly, just to announce that enrollment seems to be moving along reasonably well with 2 hiccups. 1 hiccup, of course, being registration was down on the first day because of PeopleSoft, but we seem to have recovered. As of a few minutes ago, 4,390 students have enrolled in 35,387 units, giving an average unit load of 8.05.
This is with a 9-unit cap.
A 9-unit cap.
Is that 8.05?
8.05.
Okay, so questions for the provost? Senator Rennett.
Will you be filling the IR position on a
intern basis at first, or would we go straight to the search?
We go straight to the search.
Senator Cabanas?
I have a question about University 238. I think I remember the student leadership class. And I was talking to one of my students in geometry class, and they said that that class has been canceled, and the students are very unhappy. And I told them I would ask at the Senate, what was the reason for the cancellation? And I'm assuming that question for you, because those are now under academic affairs, as I understand it.
That was a university course, yeah. The reason it was canceled was because of money. It cost $52,000 to run the transactions. We have decided that because of priorities, we would rather offer courses that students need to graduate as a priority. However, I really want to emphasize that although the course has been canceled, the training hasn't been canceled. And John Confield at the moment is working, and we'll be talking to the students about what kinds of workshops to put on to provide training as those students go through what used to be 238. So we'd like to think that we could do this almost better in the future, but it's yet to develop. So there will be training workshops, but it won't be for credit.
Senator Sengas.
So is it Pat Parsons is going to be covering the institutional research?
I'm not sure yet. We're sort of trying to get a list. This happened very recently, a couple of days ago. We can't expect Pat to cover everything. It's not in the job description, and it would be unfair. So we're trying to find a list of the obligations we have to the Chancellor's Office for reporting. We're going to prioritize them. I've already notified the Chancellor's Office. We've got a little bit of a problem. And we'll look around campus for people that can satisfy the reporting. But we really would like to put this search together very fast and find the right kind of person for this position.
All right. If FSSP with that video, if SAC can do anything to help, just let us know.
That'd be great. And IT have also suggested they might be able to help, and Matthew's stepping up to the plate as well. So I think we'll have it covered, but it's a little unfair.
Any more questions for Provost Artisan? Okay. Let's see. Chair Elect Purser.
Right. In structure and functions this week. We pushed through trying to figure out exactly where we were in the nomination process or the people who have nominated or been nominated for all these positions that we need to hold an election for. We're doing fairly well. We do have two searches that we still need people for. We need one more person for the search committee to serve on the search committee for the chief of police. And they actually need three more people to serve on the search committee for the chief information officer. The deadline for this is tomorrow, so it would be really helpful to keep the bushes and get some names on this list. Otherwise, Laurel informs me that we will be running an election during finals week, which has not proved to be the most successful strategy for running elections in past times. So that's my main report, is to make sure that we see if we can get these names for these positions.
Okay. Any questions for Chair Elect Purser? Let's see, Vice President Schleger. Vice President of Associated Students, Rainey. Oh, where you go? You can get your food. Go ahead. Sorry, everybody was missing, so you were next on the list for reports. Why don't we jump to the first business item? Let's do business item number one, revision to priority registration policy. This is a second reading. Senator Madavi.
We have in your packet a revised priority registration policy. There were a few changes that were made from last time. One is to clarify the members of the armed services. There was a question about the other than honorable discharge. That really is what it says in the law. One was changing 3.2 to Roman numeral 3.8, and also to make sure that all of the was correct, so the numbers now run positive. So I believe those are the only changes made from last time.
So is there any discussion? Seeing none. All those in favor of approving the new priority registration policy, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. That was the fastest business item of the year. So far. All right. Vice President Rainey, would you like to give a report?
Sorry. So I'd like to lead off by thanking the faculty and the staff, the administration, and especially the officers who were present and supportive and cooperative during the student demonstrations that went on the week before Thanksgiving break. It was great. We had faculty members bringing support packages late in the evening and early in the morning, and showing support and helping with dialogue. And Dr. Robinson and others were out for hours answering student questions and being very frank and honest, and it was genuinely appreciated by the students. So I wanted to say, extend gratitude and say a very hearty thank you. Also, from the Senate, two resolutions were passed, I believe, since the last meeting, one of which was asking the university to develop a system for composting food scraps that are produced in dining services. And then the other one was in response to the 16-unit cap, which has since been, for the most part, handled. A big piece of that resolution that will go out within the next week was asking for communication and thorough and consistent communication. I think we all recognize and understand the importance and the challenges that you have communicating with such a large group of and diverse group of people, especially with all the distractions and forms of communication that go on. Oftentimes, the game of telephone becomes quite challenging. And so that resolution is really pleading a more concerted effort to make that communication a priority on campus. I believe that's it from our world.
Any questions for Vice President Rainey? All right. Let's see. Statewide Senators Nelson R. Wilson, have any report?
Oh, we're not sure there'll be one.
Take it away,
Brian. that's the truth.
Not sure there will be.
We're not sure there will be an academic senate, actually, because they don't have the funding for us to continue.
Fun. Yeah, Brian's right. We don't know the exact size of the shortfall, but there is a shortfall, and the statewide senate in the last couple of years has taken every step it can to cut back in every way it can, short of sign time, and now we're talking about cutting back sign time. And we may not know until we know, which mid-year that we are, maybe next week. We have interim teleconference next week, so we may know more by then. One suggestion that's been made is that the budget or this portion of it be shifted to the campus. I've got some concerns about that because of the disparity between the middle and the fundamental various campuses. Campuses have been sent to the campuses. We're as usual, not particularly pleased with the statewide senate, which has a budget of less than $1 million, less than $900,000 for the entire year, is not a priority for the chancellor in a budget of $2 million. To be engaged in shared governance, and we won't even keep the governance afloat. know, I mean, give me a break. I'm sorry, it's the end of the school.
Any questions for the statewide senators?
I just want to make a point. It does, is yet again, one of the outstanding examples of what incredibly warped priorities that they have in the CSU managers, that they will not fund the academic senate. It's one of their additional obvious example of their utter and complete contempt for shared governance. But I want to actually point out that it's about a $4.5 billion budget. So you couldn't even find it as a rounding error. What the chancellor is doing to punish the faculty for having the audacity to question the top-down, rather mindless management. I don't have voting rights on this body, but it seems to me if we want to worry about resolutions, rather than talking about resolutions, talking about free speech, which we got, a resolution condemning the idea that they would underfund the statewide academic senate because the chancellor's having a fit. Now, there's a resolution that I think we should be able to get behind. That was a point of a question to you, Catherine. Would you agree with that?
I agree, sir. And I had planned to do something to that effect once we get some information.
All right. Any other questions? Our 3:30 time surgeons just came in, and if it's okay with you, we'll jump it down a little bit and go a few minutes early. Is that all right? So I'm happy to introduce Professor Jeff Langley and Lieutenant Robert Cole, who are going to speak to us for a period of time about the Green Music Center. It's been 7 years since they were here, but since Jeff was here, I believe.
7 years.
Right. So, why don't you come around to this side to speak?
Okay, thank you for inviting us here. It's certainly time that we make an appearance again. I was hoping today could be mostly, the time always goes so fast with these things, that this could be mostly about questions and concerns coming from you. It's a particular opportunity today because Robert Cole is here. If some of you don't know who Robert Cole is, he for 23 years, well, he created Cal Performances in Berkeley. He came to UC Berkeley about 26 years ago to basically build on the Committee of Arts and Lectures presentations in Zellerbach Auditorium and other venues on the campus that included Bueller Hall and Hertz Hall and the Greek Theater and other venues. And in that 23 years, he created what Cal Performances has become today, which is probably, I certainly think, the most important presenting venue on the West Coast. And he's built an entire audience that comes from all around to see dance, world music, hear music, all kinds, and made it a truly internationally great destination, one of the top in the country. He traveled up here to Sonoma State about a year and a half ago. What was the first concert you heard of? Okay, Ruth Ann Swenson did a Sunday concert here, and he attended. He invited us down there about 8 years ago, which was when I think Robert probably first heard about it. He said, well, as far as I'm concerned, you're a competition to us. But when he came up, he had recently retired, fell in love with the hall, and before we knew it, he was working with us. Recently retired from Berkeley, and it's been heaven for me to work with him. And he's done many things for us already. We have a first season of headliner artists booked already for 12-13. And I just want to give you a very brief overview of the inaugural season at the Green Music Center, and then I would like to open things up to you all. I distributed some handouts. One is just a one-pager summary of the venue, the Green Music Center itself, mission materials, etc. On the back of that is a one-pager. I believe Eduardo was still here as provost, and he last convened an academic GMC committee to talk about ways that the academy at large could participate in the venue and Weill Hall. And this was the list that you all left off with. Whoever was on this committee, I was not. So I just attached that as well. And then the other front and back single page is a look at our first inaugural season. We do have a grand opening weekend. The official gala opening concert is Saturday night, September 29th, 2012, 10 months from now. And the night is followed the next day, Sunday, all day, beginning at 6 a.m. with a consecration-style choral performance in the main hall. Hope to see all of you there at 6 a.m. And a community day with free or very, very low prices for events throughout the day, including a 2 p.m. concert by the Santa Rosa Symphony. Their debut concert is the official resident orchestra of the center. A major bluegrass artist who I can't announce today, but will very soon, and then finishing it all off with a 10 p.m. fireworks blast. Then the next day, literally the next day, October 1st, we start the opening season with the Santa Rosa Symphony's first concert set. The Santa Rosa Symphony is the resident orchestra during the course of the academic year. They will present 7 sets of 3 concerts each and will hold all rehearsals in Joan and Sanford Weill Hall, which is the big hall. They will also present a few special concerts that include some of their youth orchestras and family concerts and things like that. Although it was not known even a year ago, or a year and a half ago at least, that the Green Music Center would actually present, as Berkeley did through Cal Performances, our donors have decided we will. These will be donor underwritten concerts during the season. We're calling ourselves Green Music Center Presents, and this first inaugural season will include 18 headliner concerts consisting of the basic breakdown that I have here. This is not a venue only for classical music. Our first year, we are having, Robert will talk more about this, the finest artists in the world today. But we are having music of all kinds and all styles. The mission of the Green Music Center is aim high equals excellence, reach wide, stylistically, audience-wise, history and experience with art in all ways. Some people think aim high and reach wide are mutually exclusive of one another. I acknowledge the paradox, but somehow it's both of those are going to coexist with one another, inevitably with some tension, but that is the Green Music Center. And then the third piece of the mission is educate all. Education drives all of this. Whenever we have a headliner artist here, we are going to do everything we can to include that artist in master classes and special presentations before the public so that we can take every advantage of the highest quality artistry on an educational level with our students while they're here. There's a very good chance, although the contract has not yet been signed yet, that the San Francisco Symphony will have an annual presence here. of a series of run-out concerts as part of their regular series at Davies Hall in San Francisco. That's going to be finalized, we hope, in January. Obviously, the School of Performing Arts is resident at the Green Music Center. The music department will present a selected series of events of all its different programs in the hall each year. The recital hall, which is not finished yet and will probably not be completed until a year or so after the hall opens in September, that will be the workhouse where the majority of music department concerts are, but the music department is also going to make abundant use of the hall, the big hall itself, and has already done so last season before we went back into construction. So music and dance, particularly in the beginning, and we hope the spoken word is the spoken word and the ideas components of the center come in more into development that other aspects of the university, including theater, will make their way into the, using the hall as well. The co-curricular group on campus presents, which is developing and growing, will present a wide variety of concerts, much like what they do now, but they are expanding, and it's expected that they will become presenters in their own right for well-known popular music artists, primarily popular music artists and dance groups from throughout the world. So On Campus Presents, it's really a consortium of campus student groups, will become one of the presenting entities of the Green Music Center. And then there's the Academy at large. The Green Music Center can be whatever we want it to be as a site for convocations, retreats, and special assemblies, conferences. We're hoping for a series of speakers and lecture series. Andrew, the provost, has spoken about a Nobel laureate series. It's really as far as our imaginations and our operations staff can carry in a given year. We don't have a big staff right now, but hopefully that will grow. The School of Extended Education, it's a natural for lifelong learning. I'm not just talking now about Weill Hall, I'm talking about Schroeder's Recital Hall as well, including, if you don't know, the classrooms and big rehearsal spaces in the center will all be used for these kinds of activities. And finally, rentals. We are still under discussion about the value of rentals. Certainly we want to make the center a community center available to musical groups and local groups, professional and non-professional, because this is a community center. But all of these things are going to be driven by the capacity of our operational limitations with staff and staffing and all of that kind of thing. And last, before I sign off and turn thing over to questions, I just want to mention this last year, the last 11 months, have been extraordinarily busy and active. It almost felt like we'd come to a stop there for a couple of years. It was getting pretty frustrating and things were moving pretty slowly. And then last December 21st, Joan and Sanford Weill walked in one day, decided to call the university for a tour of this center. Sanford Weill, for closer to 30 years, has been the chairman of Carnegie Hall. Joan Weill, for 20 years, has been the chairman of the Alvin Ailey Dance Company in New York. They are one of two of America's most generous, largest philanthropists. They fell in love with our hall, our center, our mission, our idea, everything we were trying to do. They particularly were intrigued by the idea that we are located at a public university, and this idea of bringing world-class to a public university where we are a slice of America's middle, and to present the best to that aspect, that slice of our culture in America, held great interest to them. So they have been extraordinarily active this last year. It seems that every day they've been here, they've been working 24/7 for this project. They've raised a lot of money. They've contributed a lot of money, and the project has made a lot of progress. We're back in construction mode now because we have the money to finish the lobby, to finish the backstage areas. We are finishing the courtyard, and now very soon, as the rains permit, we're going to begin the outdoor landscaping, at least the first phase of it, so that by the time we open in September, the doors will be open, the grass will be out there, and our grand opening will include the outdoor experience, weather permitting, at the end of September, including the indoor experience. So it's been a really good year. There's a lot to do, but there's a feeling in the air now that this thing is really going to happen, and it's going to become what we've hoped it would become. Thanks to Robert, we have brought on board some really high-level professional consultants in the PR and marketing area, San Francisco-based Karen Ames and Patty Gessner. We have had visits by the Wild Music Institute at Carnegie Hall, who are interested in partnering us in a whole lot of areas that I don't have time to go into now, but if your questions want to go there, I can talk more about that. And we're in the process of designing an East Bowl, a Hollywood Bowl style, but not that large, outdoor venue where we hope eventually the summer festival will return to Sonoma State. And in the summer, Sonoma State University will be a destination for a world-class summer festival where people will come from all over to celebrate the arts, dance, arts, and ideas in one of the most beautiful places on the planet. So that's all I have. The last thing I included in my packet is the 12-year-old still ballad programming wheel, which is a picture of how we originally envisioned this center being used here at this university, how it will fit into, how it could fit into life here at Sonoma State academically, in terms of entertainment, in terms of making this place a cultural hub, not only for our university, but for the entire community and people who travel. So, thanks. Questions? Robert, why don't you talk?
Well, let's have a few questions.
Sales.
Questions? Senator Chan.
I see in this wheel you have popular and folk music. Do you envision that Sonoma State actually will have, say, one event that you would invite just an ethnic group to sing or to dance and make us seem
to value the ethnic contribution, rather than, you said to aim high and reach wide. Yes. And I do worry about the contradiction there. So when you reach wide, you might not be aiming high, but when you be able to accept that contradiction?
I think when you reach wide, you should always try to aim as high as you possibly can.
Okay. I think excellence is a goal you should never let go of. Okay. But excellence is relative. Obviously, there are top professionals in their field, and there are community groups. This is also a place for community groups and for students who are learning their craft. And this will certainly include both, all of those things.
Thank you.
More questions?
Senator Madison. Have any discussions with any of the local schools, like the next door Rancho Cotati? They have a choral group that's been going door to door to raise money. I believe they're going to Carnegie Hall in the spring. I'm going to correct it somewhere else. And I was thinking that would be working with groups like that would be a wonderful thing for them. And also, there's a junior college, and so in fact, in our region, there's other
community colleges like Napa. So have you had any discussions with other institutions at the high school or the community college level?
Yeah, that was what the Wild Music Institute visit was all about.
It started in a more infant stage. I knew about it because I lived back in New York then, but it officially in 2003, the Wilds created the Wild Music Institute at Carnegie Hall.
And what that institute is all about is outreach to underserved communities in New York City and the entire Triborough area. And they do everything from neighborhood concerts to programs in the schools that bring, LinkUp, for example, is a program that brings students in grades 3 to 5 playing recorders, learn core repertoire from orchestral performances, and then they bus all the kids to Carnegie Hall, and they all participate in the rehearsal as players. That's just one program. But the Y Music Institute in itself is an outreach program for underserved areas in the arts, and the Wiles are almost the exclusive supporter of that. And we're hoping to partner with exactly those kinds of relationships with some of the public schools in Sonoma County. There are so many programs, though, we're trying to choose, and Andrew and I were talking about this earlier today, which ones we should start with, because there are quite a few programs, different ones serving different goals, but certainly the public schools are part of that outreach. Senator Barger.
Are there any projections as to the financial reality of these projects? I mean, I see that the seating capacity is high, reaching up to 7,000. And even though there are PR firms in San Francisco, etc., is there any statistical data available as to, here we have the party, is anybody going to show up at that party? And what is needed in terms of filling capacity in order to make these operations self-sufficient?
Well, if I may respond to that, of course I face that all the time at Berkeley. In fact, the more tickets we sold, the university started taking money away from us. I won't suggest that here tonight. But here's my goal when I was asked to come on here and help as a consultant, really, to organize a program for the first year, especially. I mean, that's all I have control over right now, is the first year working with Jeff, which has been a great pleasure, by the way. But at least for the first year, I can tell you, I feel very confident that you're asking, if you have a party, will people come? People will come. The problem will be we won't be able to satisfy, for most of the concerts, the number of people who want to come. And there are a couple of reasons for that. One is the artists are at very high level. In every area, you're asking about these different areas, but in every area that we've still, in which we are working, which is, you know, various kinds of music and from various cultures and so on and so forth, they are the top people in the world. And because we're not doing, as we did at Berkeley, 120 performances. We're doing, I think, 17 or 18 right now, as we're looking at. But we tried to really focus in and make sure that what we did would be successful. And now, I don't mean that every artist is the top in their field yet, but some of them are going to be the top in the field and are coming up. But most of them are pretty big names, and big names in various ways, big names in certain categories. So I feel certain that from the point of view of attendance, it will be very good, very good. But the second part is, and probably which many people do not realize, and in fact when I came here and started speaking to some people on the campus, it seemed they didn't realize it. And I think we realize it more now, that the real thing, I always said, you know, it's not about selling tickets, it's about people writing checks. And so you have to build a program that attracts people who believe in this. As, let's say, Andrew Carnegie believed in building Carnegie Hall. And I was able to do that at Berkeley. You know, right now, my successor is surviving on the fact that I built a really great board and they're writing checks. It is a problem. Somebody writes a check for $100,000. I mean, you know, that happened. But, of course, that took 25 years to develop that. But that's very possible here, and that's very doable here, and that's sort of been my strategy to make it work, because you cannot make it work on selling tickets alone. You can fill it every night, and you still, you know, you come up short. But you have people who believe in this, who have the means to support these kinds of things and do if you do it right. If you do it wrong, it's a disaster. So I think the first year, at least I could say, we've done it right.
Senator Strzok.
I'd like to thank both of you for being here today and for sharing this information with us. I'd like to ask you just a couple of questions in reference to a position that I serve as a board member with the Sonoma County Adult and Youth Development Organization, which is a nonprofit organization here in Rotor Park. Various business leaders sit on that, and by leaders I mean relatively small fry, you know, grand stage of business leaders, because it's a small town, as well as the mayor of Rotor Park. And the city right now is experiencing, like all small cities or New York cities, economic distress in terms of the budget, et cetera. The school district currently is losing about 100 students a week because of flight out of this area, residential Boston. And the organization itself is suffering under the kind of new funding constraints that are happening for nonprofits based on depressed, you know, economic resources to go out to provide services to working class and poor families in the area. So this organization is struggling, and one of the ways in which they're attempting to grow is through youth education. I was very surprised to hear that the Wiles were here. Oh, what's doing that right? What? And that they had brought the Carnegie Music Center people, and that they were interested in starting a summer youth camp, because we've been over the past 6 months at a board struggling with how to fund just a basic after school or summer camp type program. And now, potentially, this could be something that would be competing with and kind of blowing us out of the water, making us like small farm. So I'm just wondering the extent to which you are actually actively reaching out to local community agencies that have a long-standing tradition of providing services to poor and working class families, and the degree to which the people are receptive. And I'm not just talking about Sandy and Joan Wild, but I'm talking about a whole consortium of people really that want to get these kinds of things going in the community. How receptive you are to reaching out to those community organizations, and whether or not I can act as a liaison for my organization with the music center to bring those people to the table together so that their efforts can, you know, that are, like I said, long-standing can be supported and not competed, not have to compete with this company. That's the first question. The second comment that I will make is that the community of Rotor Park, as has been communicated to me by the mayor and by other people on the board, is extraordinarily excited about this opportunity. They are chomping at the bit to open. You'll be turning people away in droves. They see this as a boon to the community, as a way to bring people to Rotor Park who will stay overnight, who will eat in restaurants, who will purchase things locally, who might perhaps, you know, want to buy a property in the area so they can be here more frequently. So the general buzz amongst the community of Rotor Park is it's like a dream come true, and they can't wait for the center to open. So I'd like to offer that comment as well. Tremendous.
Well, I would say, relative to your first question or subject, you know, reaching out to groups like that and collaborating, I think, is the idea, is certainly something we want to do, and certainly in the plan. I mean, one of the issues, there's a couple of things that have been talked about here that I didn't jump in on, but I know that one of the major issues, we don't really have a full staff yet. We don't really have a staff to do all of these things that we would like to do, and that we did at Berkeley, and that at Carnegie Hall, they have this, I walked into their office last year, and you know, they have a couple of hundred people working there. It's amazing. Looks like a Citibank all over again. And we don't have that, you know. It's Jeff, myself, and a few others. So this is something we have to develop gradually, but certainly in our thinking and our plans and at utmost in our thinking. But you have to solve this problem first. You have to do something really, as you say, really big, so that when it happens, people will notice. People not just here, but people everywhere will notice, you know, in the whole country, and hopefully in the whole world. That's our real goal, to be an international destination
especially in the summers. So, and I think the city of Rhode Park will benefit greatly from the people who come here, spend money, et cetera, et cetera. Not just Rhode Park, but the surrounding area, wherever there's a hotel, certainly, restaurants, et cetera. So,
but going back 15 years, Don Green, the first conversation, I remember the first retreat up in Yonkers, February 1st, 1998, this was what we talked about. In education, we wanted to be a model for arts education in a community. That's one of the things we wanted to be. We're also, it turned out, we also have built one of the most magnificent structures, concert halls in the world. And people are speaking about it as having some of the best acoustics experienced anywhere. So there's a lot to juggle here. And when Robert arrived at Berkeley, at least the building existed. We still, we're just getting to the point where we're opening. And that, of course, has been the primary thing that's taken all of our attention over the past 15 years, is figuring out how to get to the next step to get this thing built. Then we're opening it, and then hopefully we can begin to get bring together people like yourselves and begin accomplishing some of the things that we've set out to do. But we did do 7 years of Green Farm. We had, you know, a youth education and dance, theater, music program for 7 years. We just didn't know that it was going to take so long to open this place. But we're committed.
Thank you.
Senator Brandt.
Thank you. I love music. I'm very excited that world-class musicians will be performing nearby. But I find it hard to reconcile this with our mission. The mission of this university is to educate students, not to entertain the community. And when I first came here as a new hire and I heard that we were building a world-class music center, I thought, well, we must have a huge and active music department. But then I go to graduation every year, I listen to hyped music, playing in pop and circumstance, and I always ask myself, where's our band? Where is our band?
Have you ever go to their concerts?
But where's our band at graduation? Why do we have a band? My high school of 400 students have a band at graduation.
Well, I can't speak to graduation, but we have an 80-piece symphonic wind ensemble. And Brian, you want to talk about it? You started it. When Brian got here, he shook people out of the trees to create. When I got here, there were 10 people in that band. Brian was here 2 years, there were 80 people in that band. It exists, and we have developed enormously over years. And one thing I want to take issue with what you just said, music is not just entertainment. The people that are music majors here are not necessarily aspiring to be musical entertainers. They're artists, and they're different. They go together, they're not mutually exclusive, but they're different. This is not about entertainment, this is about art. Hopefully, art is an important part of an arts and sciences university. And I certainly have been operating under the conviction that it is. So, anyway, Brian, if you want to speak to that, sir.
Well, could I just interject, because I have one thing that I really noticed here at this university, having worked at Cal for so many years. I told Brian and Jeff this. We had a meeting a couple of weeks ago of all of the performing arts faculty, and then later on with all of the music faculty. And I was so amazed, first of all, that there could be a meeting of the entire performing arts faculty. Because at Berkeley, and I'll repeat this, this would never happen. You know, it was so civil, it was so productive, it was so much of a collaborative feeling, and then we went into the music faculty, I got the same feeling, because, you know, usually, quite often, I would say, I won't say Berkeley, but just in my business, my life, you know, it's the this person here and this person here, and they don't talk to each other, they don't work together. It's quite different here, and I was very struck by that, having spent so many years in a different environment. Not a bad environment, just a different environment. And I give a lot of credit both to Jeff and to Brian for creating that environment and maybe making the right hires that makes this possible. because performing arts needs collaboration, and if you don't have collaboration, it's not going to work. And I think it works here. So.
I'll take a couple more. Senator Chan. Oh, Senator Thigpen is first. I'm sorry.
I wanted to ask a quick question about staffing. You had mentioned staffing at Carnegie Hall and hundreds of people sitting at the bank. And maybe I'm just ignorant, but I'm just kind of curious the staffing levels of the GMC right now. And is that funded by the donations, or how are those staff positions funded? Is that general fund, or how does that work? Maybe I'm just ignorant.
Well, you know, Larry should be here to give you the real facts about how he's doing it. But he is slowly, very slowly, one at a time, creating positions, sometimes transferring people from other departments who go over there and assume related responsibilities. But it's one person at a time, and all of us are wearing multiple hats. It will be that way for a while. We are a startup, which is why our first year, we can't do everything. We can't be open 365 nights a year. We just don't have a front of house or back of house staff to do it. And obviously in this economic environment, the university cannot take on a lot of the hires to our music center. So it's a very delicate, slow, gradual process, and we're very aware of that. In a way, it's a lifesaver because it allows us to develop our systems gradually so that things don't move too quickly.
And also, may I add that the principal staff, as far as, if you say at the upper level, first of all, it's Jeff, just kind of donates his time, works all the time. But, I'm sort of like acting like a director, but I'm really a consultant, and I'm very cheap. But then I brought on to help us get a really major AAA start two of the best consulting people in public relations and marketing. The marketing person works one day a week by the hour, so it's very kind of, relative to other places, it's very inexpensive. The PR person the same. She has a short-term contract to get us through the opening, which means she's dealing with New York press, not just San Francisco press or Warner Park press. So we've, to some extent, I don't say we've solved the problem, because it's a huge problem, this financial issue that we're all in this state. It's not, and in education. But one way to get this done was to just bring in part-time consultants like myself who are here for a short time, there are no benefits, et cetera, et cetera. And so then we have some other new people that are coming on, as you've said. It's a problem. Yes?
So we just have a few more minutes. Senator Chan.
Short question. I was in one concert. I was blown away, and I'm very happy that it's about to be finished. I have a very selfish question. I'm not a subscriber for the Santa Rosa Jazz Symphony. Would I be able to get in? Yeah. Would there be tickets?
For what?
I'm not a subscriber.
You don't have to be a subscriber to the Santa Rosa Symphony to attend the Santa Rosa Symphony concert. You can always buy a single ticket. You know
there will be tickets available.
You can buy single tickets to the Santa Rosa Symphony concerts. Yes, unless they sell every seat out as a subscription. But boy, I'd be really happy if that happened, but I don't expect it to.
Then I won't
be
picking it.
But there will be concerts where there will be single tickets. There will be some that, like the opening concert, I'm sure it's going to be a big problem. It's going to be too crowded. And of course, we'll have the lawn, we hope. We hope. And where many people can come.
Okay,
last comment is going to be, Senator Nelson. Pass. Oh, then. Okay,
Senator Galinsky gets the last comment.
Just a real quick question following on Senator Chan's question. Seeing as this is going to be art that is visual as well as oral and I guess visceral, will students be able to get in? Are you going to make it affordable and available to our students, because that's kind of why we're.
Well, when I came to Berkeley, I had this following experience. I had been there maybe 6 months or so, and I was in Wheeler Hall, And there was some kind of a forum with students and whatever, and I just was listening. And this one student said, well, we can't afford to go to Zellerbach Hall, it's too expensive. Now, this was in 86, you know, so it wasn't very expensive, but I guess it was, it seemed. And I thought, that's a problem. So I went to my then boss, the vice chancellor, and I said, I think we should make all tickets, and also to my, I had a faculty committee that I worked with. You should make all tickets for at any time for students half price. Now, that that time, you know, a lot of tickets were $20, so that meant $10 maybe. And then also, like if they were music students often and there was something going on, you know, that particularly, say it was a jazz concert and they're jazz students, and we would always just give them tickets to make sure that they showed up. But they had to show up. And so there are lots of different ways. First of all, I hope that we will establish this half-price arrangement for students. And if you'll check, you don't need to, I'll tell you. Like the University of Michigan, which is one of the major presenters on a university campus in America, along with Cal, which is the best. But the University of Michigan is one example. But I noticed on their website, if you look at it, and I know the guy who runs it, the students can buy tickets, but only in this section, only at a certain time. My proposal has been the students can buy tickets anytime at half price. Now, I also know, and when I mentioned to some of our board members and so on, people say, well, geez, wouldn't they buy it? No, they don't do it. They don't buy tickets. We wish to God they would, you know, all of them, but they don't. And so at Cal, it wasn't a problem. It was just a great thing that they could buy a ticket, you know. Now, they can buy a subscription, but they don't buy subscriptions. Students don't do that. So that's where it comes in, where sometimes there'll be things that'll, you know, maybe they'll be sold out. But we'll make sure the students get there, because we're going to do everything we can to make it affordable and make sure that they know about it and that they get there.
Thank you. Do you want to make any closing remarks?
The only other thing about that is, Armand, that because of IRA fees the students pay, all of the music department concerts are free to students, and that's true of our plays too, and our dance concerts. And OCP on campus presents similarly has very reasonable prices for their events, mostly because students have already paid for the larger part of them through their IRA fees. So that will not change in these venues.
Well, I'd like to thank you very much for coming, and hopefully less than 7 years we'll
be back. We'll see you again.
Yeah, and really, could I just say that if some of you, if for some chance you may not have been inside the hall yet, don't be embarrassed if you haven't. I would personally, after the first of the year, when we're through this last phase of construction, of the interior construction, I would personally love to give you a tour through this hall. There's nothing I love to do more than to show campus faculty this extraordinary hall. So call me up and I'll personally take you through it if you haven't had the pleasure up to now. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to move on to business item number two, which is the substitute for the resolution that we looked at last time. So, Senator Estrada.
We have a copy in front of you of Academic Planning Committee's resolution calling for suspension of the CSU online initiative. We need to give consideration the request by the Faculty Senate to create a novel or original or grammatically correct version of the resolution. My committee all weighed in and made some substantive changes in terms of the grammatical stuff. And you now have in front of you the resolution that has been approved unanimously by my committee. So I present it to members of the Faculty Senate and all participants who here for review and consideration, and I'm requesting that the Senate endorse it so that we may send it on to the various partners, community members, and recipients. Thank you.
So content-wise, it's very similar to what we saw last time.
Is
there a discussion? Senator Brown.
Before I make my comment, this is the first reading.
This is the first reading.
Okay. I like the changes. I like the resolution. I believe a few years ago, this Senate decided to change the format of the resolution so that we do not have whereas clauses followed by resolve. We just have a resolution followed by rationale. So I don't know what the will of the Senate is, but we haven't had a resolution come through this way for quite some time. And my suggestion would be to follow our regular practice of just having a resolution followed by rationale.
Senator Lees.
I guess in terms of what this is and what you're asking us to do, a little confused because the resolve clause talks about the academic planning committee calling upon faculties, and I'm just kind of expecting a resolution that the faculty senate would then pass as its own thing. So at the second reading, I think it would probably be better to change that resolve clause to be in the faculty senate.
Just endorse. Endorse.
Go ahead.
Not sure exactly what we're endorsing in that case, but I think that's kind of the idea of it. The fact that we said it calls for the suspension of the initiative of return of the money. So anyway, but the fact that they said doing something, okay.
Dave White, Senator Nelson.
Yes, I think first of all, the problem that Senator Lees raised is the issue that Senator Lees raised is very easily taken care of. Secondly, with regard to I agree that is generally the format, but I don't see any problem with this. I think this resolution is substantially similar enough that it should go straight to a second reading. And again, I think the issue that Senator Lees raised is very easily taken care of, and I'd be happy to offer an amendment to do so, so I'd like to go to a second.
So is there a second for moving this to a second reading?
Second.
Okay. So any discussion on the issue of waiving the first reading? Senator Brown.
Well, I understand what Senator Nelson is saying, but my understanding is we do not, that the rationale is never part of our resolutions, that we have decided that rationales are not part of our resolutions. So with these whereas clauses as they are, the rationale will become part of our resolution, and that is not our, that has not been our practice in recent years.
My understanding is that when we vote on a resolution phrased this way, we are not voting on the whereas, we are voting only on the resolve clauses. So the whereas format versus the rationale format is a perhaps being an appropriate word style of difference.
So I think if given the understanding that this body has of our, you know, switching the format to resolve followed by a rationale, I would rule in agreement with statewide Senator Nelson that what we'd be voting on is the two resolve clauses. Okay, so we're still discussing whether to waive the first reading. Any more on that? All right, all those in favor of waiving the first reading, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Okay, the motion carries, so we're in the second reading. Let's see. Here's Brian.
In the first resolve clause, there's an extra of and of in the first line. I think that we remove those words.
So can you read off the first sentence as it will now read?
Resolve that the academic planning committee call upon the of the faculty senate. I think it should be call upon the faculty senate.
Okay, well, the was gone, it was a typo. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To address the issue that Senator Lees raised, I would like to move to delete a phrase in the first line of the second resolve clause, that is, delete the words academic planning committee called on the of. I think we get rid of Senator rent. So the first one would be that the faculty senate of Sonoma State University join, or that two other CSU campuses
join
in support of.
So the motion is to change the first sentence of the first resolve clause to read, resolve that the faculty senate of Sonoma State University joins other CSU campuses, etc.
We're the academic.
Yeah, the academic.
Thank you. Okay, wait, let me read the motion and somebody can second it if they want to. Resolve that the Academic Senate of Sonoma State University joins other CSU campuses in support. Is there a second to that? Okay. Senator
Sands. Oh, no, actually.
Okay, Senator Lee.
I think dramatically it is that resolve that the Academic Senate join other CSU campuses.
Join.
Yeah, not join.
So just
something like that.
Oh, I see. I think it's not right.
Yes. So I moved to amend the amendment.
No, you're right. You're right, I guess.
Without an S.
So in fact, the S was not there. I inserted it. The original mover did not include an S. So the S is gone. It was never there.
Okay. All right. Are we still, we're talking about the change in the language yet? Is that where we are now?
Yes.
Okay, I really like the change of the language, because if we get done with the change of the language, we can move on and adopt this damn thing, because it's sort of embarrassing that Sonoma State is so far behind the rest of the state. The rest of the state realizes this is a disastrous idea coming from a top-down, moronic planning process that completely avoids faculty to create a for-profit privatization deal. So once we adopt this beautiful language, we can adopt this and join our colleagues on a much more sensible plane.
Are there any more comments on the motion to change the language in the first resolve clause?
In the spirit of Senator Levin's comment that even statewide is an academic senate, not a faculty senate.
Okay. We're currently on a resolution to change the language of the first sentence. Let's finish that. Any more comments on changing the first two lines of the first resolve clause to read, resolve that the Academic Senate of Sonoma State University join other CSU campuses? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. That one's changed. Now, Senator Lee, what's your
statewide academic senate.
All right. Is there any objection to changing faculty senate to academic senate? That's done. Thank you. All right. Any more conversation? Any more discussion of this resolution? And remember, it's just the two resolve clauses that we're actually voting to approve. The remainder is just a rationale. All right. All those in favor of the resolution say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, ABC, for bringing that back. Okay, CFA Representative Merrifield, please.
Thank you. About a week and a half ago, the Chancellor's Office sent out a chronology of sorts of what happened during the week of November 14th. Through November 18th, and I wanted to take this opportunity to actually set the record straight, because A, it left things out, B, it distorted things, and C, it's time for an update. They brought up their chronology seemed to suggest that the week this had to do with labor actions, boards of trustees meetings, bargaining, etc. And it left out November 14th, which was a Monday. And November 14th is a valuable day because the Chancellor held a press conference on November 14th where he said, a few faculty at East Bay and Dominguez Hills will stay home on Thursday, but all courses will be offered. It's that same kind of in-depth prescience that he brings to so many things. According to an extrapolation from the San Jose Mercury News and the Associated Press, 93% of all sections at East Bay were canceled on November 17th. According to people who worked at East Bay, the parking lots for students was about 8 to 10% full. The parking lots for staff was about 40% empty. Dominguez Hills had equally great numbers. So the reality is classes did not meet at East Bay or Dominguez Hills on the 17th of November. The strike was overwhelmingly successful. And that once again, the chancellor completely misreads the reality of the world with the same kind of deep-seated projection he brings to so many other things, like the priorities of the CSU. On the 16th, as most of you know, there was a meeting of the Board of Trustees that there was some agitation. It should be noted, by the way, that the four people that were arrested, no charges will be filed at this point. The district attorney has dropped charges against the students accused of breaking the window because all the photographs show quite clearly the window was broken by the police. The statement made by the chair of the statewide academic senate that after the police pepper sprayed the students pepper sprayed the police is inaccurate. What happened was the police pepper sprayed from indoor to outdoor, and then they came back, and so the police pepper sprayed themselves. So I just wanted to clarify a few things. Additionally, the other three students arrested who were supposed to be arraigned today, the district attorney has said no charges will be filed at this time. The window or the door that was broken as a result of a police officer putting his club between the two doors, and then as they pulled, the door broke. Look at the pictures, the glass is in the patio. If a student had broken the door, the glass would have been in the building. Okay, so that was not a student who went to destroy the property. It was an accident in which both the police and the students were pushing. Further, and this is based on people who were at the Board of Trustees meeting on the 16th of November, who were also at the Board of Trust meeting on the 15th of November, 2006. As you recall, 1,500 people attended that board meeting, and no police were called in to break it up. This was a smaller group, and according to people who were participating, though there were some people using four-letter words, which the chancellor apparently deeply resented, apparently the only person who can use four-letter words is the chancellor when he's yelling at his colleagues in the statewide academic senate. Nonetheless, he called the police and said, we have to stop and move to another room. And it should be noted that it looked like he was counting the votes on whether there was going to be a tuition increase, and he was very frightened that he was going to lose the vote. Now, did he stop it because of that? Causation and correlation are not identical, but that is the timing of when he stopped the meeting. They then went into another room, denied people access, then denied people access to the meeting, and then said in the great, using the kind of the great quotes of Ron Ziegler, for those of you who don't know Ron Ziegler, he was the press secretary for Richard Nixon, who frequently had to say, what I said yesterday was inoperative. They use slightly different words to say, oops, we did deny access to people. We denied denying access to. But they did it with their usual aplomb. They denied access, for example, to a public meeting to a reporter for the Los Angeles Times. So once again, the chancellor's eye is just unerring. So that was the situation that happened on the 16th. As I've already said, on the 17th, contrary to what the chancellor suggested would happen, and what actually did happen is two campuses were closed down as a result of the first strike in the history of the California State University on behalf of the faculty. about 24 faculty from Sonoma State University joined about 400 faculty from East Bay, and hundreds of faculty from the other campuses in Northern California at East Bay to close the campus. On November 18th, we did in fact have a bargaining session. At that bargaining session, the chancellor reported that we walked away as if they were eager to stay. We asked them about 7 issues. Were they willing to talk about them? They were willing to talk about benefits. Their proposal on benefits was that they wanted language that would allow campus presidents to raise parking on faculty to any level determined that the campus president wanted it to be, and they would have impact bargaining of a meet and confer. What that means is we would go in and they'd say, what's the impact? Well, you just increased parking fees, you're not giving us any money, you're taking money away from us. And they would say, well, there's no impact on me, and bargaining would be over. At that point, we did declare impasse, which means we have not stopped bargaining. It means that the next step is to bring in a mediator. Now, since the chancellor seemed to suggest that he was eager to talk to us, which would have been neat because he hasn't been eager to talk to us for 18 months, if he is, when we get the mediator and we have the process, we contact the mediator the next day, we're hoping to be in mediation before the end of the year. We did not walk away from bargaining. We did walk away from the table. They did get that right. And I wanted to bring one more update. If you read the San Francisco Chronicle this morning, you discovered that the trustees have canceled their meeting, their extra meeting for December 5th, out of fear that all these rowdy students would come in to talk about compensation for campus presidents. But if you read it closely, there is that delightful issue that says that if the legislature should determine and pass legislation saying in hard times you can't give raises to presidents and nobody else, they have several methods were discussed about how they can evade the will of the legislature and the governor and give presidents, campus presidents, money in other ways. One of the ways they suggested was a surcharge on parking fees. So essentially, their plan is apparently that they will raise our parking fees so that the person who is apparently most in need of financial help in the CSU, or at least in Sonoma State, President Ramagnani can get a raise, okay? So I want you to kind of recognize that this is what is important when you look at priorities. Is there any concern about raising student fees? Well, if we can do it in secret. Is there any concern about, clearly there's no concern about number of units the students can take, etc. Okay, but the highest priority continues to be making sure that campus presidents are compensated, even if the state legislature doesn't want them to be compensated, and they've come up with plans to do that. Also, the United Auto Workers, which represents Unit 11, which are our teaching assistants, made an offer to the chancellor's office and to the chair of the trustees, Chair Carter, saying, if you read the article in the San Francisco Chronicle and the statement put out, public statement put out by the chancellors why they're canceling Monday's meeting is they're afraid. You know, they're afraid of rowdy students, and now with a broken door, how could they possibly deal with rowdy students? The UAW representative who works at the CSU Long Beach campus said that they could hold the trustees meeting at the CSU Long Beach campus because he has a very, very good relationship with the campus cops, and he would guarantee the safety of the trustees if they just come to CSU Long Beach, that between the student assistants and the police, they would guarantee the safety of the trustees. As of noon today, the trustees have not responded to that request. So I don't know if that means the trustees don't trust the CSU Long Beach cops or whether there's some other issue. But nonetheless, they have decided that they will roll over the issue of presidential compensation packages and how to evade the will of the legislature and the governor until January 24th and January 25th. And so that's essentially, rather than that nice brief I want to do an update of the abandonment of the students by the evil faculty, as opposed to the abandonment of the students by giving more and more money to management and canceling more and more sections. I would ask the students here to figure out who abandons the student. The trustees who put 65% of money in non-direct service of academics, or the faculty who actually teach the students. So that's an update report on what happened since we last met.
Questions for Senator Representative Merrifield, Senator Meese.
You described the strike as a success, and I'm wondering what CFA's objectives for the strike was. As far as I know, I have a new contract, have a search for a new chancellor. Other people
we
might really wish
you. Well, that's a good question, thank you. A couple of things. One is we wanted to make sure that the general public understood the level of dissatisfaction, and since the chancellor said there is no level of dissatisfaction, courses will be offered. We demonstrated it to the media. We got if you look at the number of editorials produced about what is happening in the CSU, even the one in the Press Democrat, says that the faculty shouldn't get their raises, which are minuscule, not because they don't deserve them, not because two fact finders, both of them verified they have the money and they should pay it, but they worry about could they be ongoing because of the base, and they consistently said that the Press Democrat, both in the op-ed piece written by Margie Purser and Elaine Newman, and in the editorial itself said, yeah, the priorities are incredibly distorted. So one thing was, let's get that information out. The other was to get the same information out for the legislature. There was at least 12 elected members of the legislature at the two campuses over the course of the day, as well as a tremendous number of people running for office. I've got their cards. So part of it was to get the public face to the people who needed to understand this. And it was a success in that standpoint. It was also a success because of the incredible solidarity demonstrated by our colleagues in CSUEU, which represents about 5 or 6 of the different units, and APC, which represents Unit 4, the Student Service Professionals. So that's what I meant by a success. Thank you.
All right, we're at our time for our faculty standards and affairs report.
So, a couple of items that I thought were important to get out to folks in a timely manner, i.e., as we get into the submission of grades for the end of the semester. In the past, many people have taken advantage of the soft deadline for getting all the grades in time between the two semesters, and we don't have that luxury this year. So please try to meet the actual grade submission deadline, which is the 23rd of December, because we're going to have a shutdown over Christmas, and then we're going to be starting to ramp up right after. I don't know when they're actually going to do the rolling of the grades, as it's been called, but we don't have the luxury of the time that we had before, so please, I know that we haven't enforced the original official grade submission deadline, but go for that if you can. Next week, I guess we're going to be trying to look at what books and other instructional materials have been adopted for courses for the spring semester. So if you haven't already ordered your textbook or notified the bookstore which books you will be using, regardless of where they're being ordered, but we are obligated to identify the books, and that's the mechanism that we're doing on the new campus. So we have to identify those, and really it's for the students. It's so that they get a chance to be able to hunt around for good deals. It's the affordable issue, but also the accessibility issue. We have folks who might need materials made accessible in various forms, and also there's a lot of folks, including the veterans, who have to have all their books together and process all this paperwork so that they can get the check to buy those books in a timely manner. So if you've already ordered your textbooks, I encourage you to double check that the bookstore knows that they still have your order, because we've heard that sometimes those orders seem to evaporate. So regardless of what's happened in the past, if you would confirm that the bookstore knows what books you are using, that would help considerably. I guess the other thing that I will be trying to have available by the time that it gets to the point of submitting grades is a little info sheet. Laurel Holmstrom has helped get this rolling along, and we've got some eyes looking at it to see how it will be helpful. But if you suspect cheating or plagiarism, we want to give a quick and easy list of what you might want to do, maybe even a few suggestions of what you might not want to do, including what's really mandatory and what's up to you to choose on what to do, so that we are consistent with our cheating and plagiarism policies and those kinds of processes. Among them, knowing that our policy doesn't allow you to immediately flunk somebody for a course because they cheated on a first offense, and among other things that I've heard about too. So we're just going to try and make that clear, and this we hope will be particularly helpful for lecturers who might be coming in and not knowing where to even look for all the policies and all that, and to ease that. So keep your eye open for that coming around. And then just as a heads up on things that we're doing, we're moving forward with the sabbatical policy, and my understanding actually is the current rounds of sabbatical evaluations, the list has been advanced from URTP to the president's office. So that process should be finishing up fairly soon. Any questions?
Vice President Rainey.
I'd just like to add a plea on the textbook front. I know there's been a history of miscommunication problems, but I'd really like to second the please follow up with the bookstore. And I know our faculty members who have don't like to use the university bookstore, and I understand that and the desire to support local business and whatnot. But from a accessibility standpoint, we have many students whose financial aid packages mandate them to get the books from the bookstore. And so it really hurts those students. I mean, that means they have funding available to do that, to get those books, but now they have to spend it out of their own pocket because it's not offered at the bookstore. And so I would really plead that you put your kind of moral oppositions aside for the students' benefit. And, you know, the first day of class or whatnot, I mean, that's fine. Encourage students to go to Northlight or eBay or whatever your preference is, but please give the students that option so that they can take advantage of those financial aid opportunities that have been afforded to them.
Senator Kabatsky.
Maybe I missed it again, but say you turn in your grades at 5 o'clock on the 23rd. My understanding is the campus is closed between Christmas and New Year's, so isn't it effectively that those things don't actually get processed till the first morning in January that they're back in the office that processes them? So I don't see what advantage is to whom to get them in at 5 o'clock on that on the Friday, on the 23rd, instead of at like 8 a.m. on the first day they're back in January?
I know, okay, I am actually trying to research exactly when the roll is going to happen, that processing of people's software, they actually determine who passed, and then all the implications of who got enough units, who's on suspension, and all that kind of stuff that then feeds into the financial aid. My understanding is that used to be done on the first day of January, you know, possible, because they had enough time to do stuff in the next several weeks and handle it all. The fear is it might have to happen before Christmas. And so the old policy that I know that we've been dealing with is if the roll happens and you don't have a grade in there, your dean signs for every change of grade for each student, not each class. So what I'm hearing is they have to do the processing before. Is maybe what's going to be happening for. So I'm trying to give an early heads up that they might not be doing the roll as they've always done at January 1st or 2nd or whatever that date was. That's what we used to do when the semester was several weeks later. I've been hearing that they might have to move it before. And so the official grade deadline is the 23rd. We should do our best to try and get it in by then.
Yeah. Okay, so Senator Waterford.
Yeah, following up on that remark, would it be possible at the next Senate meeting to have clear instructions as to when it is being processed?
Yeah, it is my intent to do that. I just thought if that was the first time we heard anything about it, then we would really be in trouble. So I am going to keep trying to research to find out exactly what that is. But I just want to give an early warning just in case.
Senator Brown.
My understanding is that I'm not sure technically in terms of the Oracle processing that happens once the grades are put in, but I know that there's an expectation that the SSPs who actually do the running of the reports, they begin that the first day back. So January 3rd, they will be getting, the registrar's office will be getting that process. So, you know, that will have a ripple effect for all sorts of other services. So I'm unaware of anything that will happen while the school is closed, unless there's some kind of internal PeopleSoft Oracle issue that will be taking place that won't require somebody actively pursuing that information. But
that's what I want to do, the research to find out exactly what the role happens.
So I'm going to ask that we leave this issue, and Senator Sangas will fill us in with more details next time. Okay, so I want to go on to the last business item, which is the resolution that was at your place here. It's titled Resolution Regarding Protest and University. So, first of all, I'm going to call on Chair Kirchner.
So, I would like to move this resolution to approve the Senate for its consideration and for its support.
So, does that have a second?
Second.
Okay. So that's been moved and seconded, so this resolution is now in a first reading. Senator Byrne.
Thank you. Of course, it's the last result of a clause that has a considerable significance. I'm noting that it asks that there be a meeting be convened to identify and adopt measures to prevent violent incidents. Do you know of violent incidents in prior demonstrations at Penn State?
I don't. I'm wondering if you can perhaps notice there's no rationale here. We're moving as fast enough as it was. The break with, you know, people emailing things back and forth. We decided not to add a rationale, but I'd like to offer one now, if that's all right.
Sure.
This came together because, frankly, because of some of the things that Vice President Rainey was talking about with the student action before Thanksgiving in two ways. One, we were intensely, those of us who participated in this and others who spoke to me, faculty who spoke to me, were intensely proud of our students and the way they handled themselves. And we also wanted to express support for the way that the university worked to make the event profoundly different from other events that were happening not at Sonoma State, but elsewhere at the same time. I was literally running Hot Cocoa to those guys and fielding emails from colleagues at Davis and students who were friends of mine at Davis on the same day almost. And the juxtaposition was profound. Quite a number of people spoke to that and wanted a resolution from our Senate that, on the one hand, commended the actions from before, and on the other hand, opened a dialogue, speaking to the need for clearer communication, between the constituent bodies on campus so that we could, in some way, not institutionalize, that's too strong a word, but to make more recognized the strategies that worked so well the first time. The main concern that we have, in part by the language is the way it is we were trying to avoid writing a resolution that would essentially come off as saying students don't have the freedom of speech to choose to break the rules. And one of the things that the students did so successfully last time was to abide by rules that the university set, in particular with reference to the tents. And that was quite a bit of a discussion, and that was a conscious decision. That was not an accident on the part of people who were conducting the protest. What we were considering is that part of your freedom of speech is to break the rules. We haven't ever had a violent episode that I know of in my 22 years here. That doesn't mean there won't be one. And right now, these things are addressed on an ad hoc, case-by-case basis. And the people making some of the rules, like the issue about the tents, are not necessarily doing so in any kind of representative or consultative way. And so we thought it might be good to open, to find, get some text out there and open the discussion, and we chose a resolution to do it.
Okay, thank you. Senator Sangas.
FSAC took a look at the resolution today, and I think it's appropriate for me to just start with a little disclaimer. So you can frame what I say afterwards with that. As an individual, I definitely have applauded what's happened with how the students have comported themselves and how the university police and just what a good thing we've got going here. I think I was very pleased to see that. And I also simultaneously do wish that Sonoma State gets some resolution or statement out there that counters what we saw at Davis in some way. And so that's my personal position, but the next thing that I want to say is coming from the committee, FSAC, because we were asked to look for it that way. And what I see was the sense of the committee was, again, they were very supportive of that first resolve clause because that's a sign that we've got some things going pretty well here. The point that got the most discussion had to do with actually, I think, the last clause in that we already have policies and procedures and measures and whatnot that have been functioning, and we wanted to make sure that that didn't get lost. Like a lot of the work that the Academic Freedom Subcommittee did last year when we were addressing issues of time, place, and manner, the changing of the free speech notification process and whatnot, when we had the abortion incident, the abortion protesters incident earlier this year, that seemed a demonstration that things, we had some good stuff going. So we just wanted to make sure that the spirit, if not the letter of the last resolve, reflected a recognition for already existing roles and procedures and whatnot, and we would encourage the use of, you know, faculty governance that's already should be there involved in being central and part of it. So that's at least.
See if Eric is in there.
Well, I have a question, since this is a first reading. The language of a couple of these resolves, the second resolve, it says critical means for students to express their individual and collective voices. Mm-hmm. The last resolve, it says potential for all potential with potential protest on campus. So those don't line up to me. I also would suggest that since we have First Amendment rights pretty much for everybody except managers, because they're at will employees. So faculty and staff can actually protest too, if we actually could define protest. So I have some concerns, kind of some definitional concerns, but I do think that if we're talking about a critical means for students, then any further discussion of potential protest would be about students. I think we need to reconcile that. I would also, I mean, my suggestion would be, if we're even going to talk about the right to express our individual collective voices in this arena, I think that we need to recognize it isn't something that belongs to students. It belongs to people living in the United States. I also have, I'm not absolutely sure that we can write something that does this, but I did want to mention something, and I apologize, this is somewhat out of order. I should have put it in my own report. There's going to be a joint legislative committee of the Senate and the Assembly of the State of California to investigate police behavior at the CSU and at the UC and demonstrations this fall, because of what happened, there is now a recognition. And by the way, my global perspective is that basically the CSU police acted very well almost every place. But there is going to be an investigation of this because this concern has escalated as a result primarily what happened at Berkeley and Davis. But anyway, if we're going to continue on this, I would ask that there be some recognition of how we're going to fit this whole idea of what does protest mean and who does it apply to, whether we're studying it or saying that it's a good idea.
Vice President Rain.
I'll pass the point to Rain. Thank you.
State Line Senator Nelson.
Yes, I would like to make a question that summarizes what you said, and in particular, because the last two resolves of the caucus made reference to their justification for supporting the Democratic
Republican.
I'm requesting a rationale because of the language in the last two and a half lines of the next to the last resolve. And the language in the last resolve about preventing violent incidents, there's almost an implication there that something like this has happened. And as you're saying that it hasn't, and that's great. So you a rational clarify your change in language so that that is not an implication. Thank you.
Any more conversation on this? All right, thank you. That concludes the first reading then, and we are back to a few more reports. So let's see, Senator Estrada, do you have an academic planning committee report? Senator Valensky, APC report?
EPC passed a four-year academic calendar today. It will be available to you as an information item. I don't think I need to go into the details of it, but for those of you who are curious, you can come and talk to me.
So we'll see you next meeting. Any questions? Well, I should have asked for questions for either of them, for Senator Estrada as APC or Senator Galinsky. Senator Cabanas.
Question for Senator Galinsky. Is there any discussion of having an entire week off of Thanksgiving? Because my experience is, and I'm sure there's many faculty have that, is that a lot of students just leave and don't show up on Monday and Tuesday.
Short answer is yes. Discussion.
The same spirit as the committee discussed actually putting Wednesday back on the calendar, the class day to keep them from taking a week off, which I'd much rather prefer.
No, we did not discuss that particular opportunity. Thanksgiving week will remain essentially unchanged for those of you who want to know what the resolution
is. Any further questions for either of those two? Okay. Let's see. Senator Madotti, Student Affairs.
I just report that the faculty standards and affairs committee has endorsed the policy for disruptive student behavior, so hopefully you'll be seeing that here soon.
Any questions for Senator Madotti? All right. Senator Painter, is there a report?
I don't have a report.
Okay. No report there. Are there any items for the good of the order? Anything's happening, Senator Brodsky?
I would just like to say, if anybody would like to hear some of the music that students are doing tomorrow noon in the library, the Chamber Wind Ensemble. There's right there on the second floor. Come on over, bring your lunch. Good. Bring out the lunch.
All right, and I will remind you, we are meeting in 2 weeks. Thursday of exam week, we're back here. And I'll see you then. Thank you.